Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey, and as you probably will have seen in the latest issue of LRM, we're talking about wheels and tyres quite a lot. There's quite a big dedicated section to all you need to know about wheels and tyres. So based on that, I'm joined by Dave Dineen, who's Director of Specialist Sales at Mitchell Deaver Tyre Services, based at Southam Tyres. He is the man in the know when it comes to all things round and rubber. So who better to talk to regarding what's new, what's old, what's happening in the scene than Dave? Nice to see you, Dave.
And you, Martin.
We sort of go back a little way, don't we? I mean, you've been involved, especially on LRO, with Neil as well as myself. Tire tests, information, new products. You're always there giving us the latest info on what's happening in tires.
Yeah, when it comes to tyres, I'm probably a 4x4 tyre geek. I think a lot of my colleagues would call me that. I've been involved in it now for over 30 years.
Wow.
And specialising purely on 4x4. So Land Rover has a very special place in our heart, and we've certainly worked very closely with the Land Rover mark over the years.
Excellent stuff. So yeah, there's no one better to talk about these things than Dave. So we'll kick off, I suppose, really with, like I mentioned, the latest issue is on sale today. In fact, it goes on sale this Wednesday. It's in shops now, so please do run out and buy it. We're just going to run through a few questions, a few things. Dave can impart some of his excellent knowledge on exactly what goes on when it comes to Land Rovers and the relationship Land Rover have had with the tyres that are fitted to them. So we'll start off with, when, say, a listener or a reader has not long had a Land Rover, they're looking at replacing the tyres that are on it. Maybe they're mismatched, maybe they're just old. What sort of choices are they looking at making with regards buying new tyres for their vehicle?
That's a very good question. That's loaded, that is, Martin. That was unfair. We do a lot of training with tyre retailers.
Right.
And people who want to really get involved with 4x4 tyres and become specialists. And the golden question that we always encourage them to ask is, when talking to somebody, always ask, what do you use the vehicle for? Are you using it on road mainly? Are you using it on road and towing? Are you using it on road and then occasional off-road? Or are you just purely mud plugging? I mean, the tyre choice, you need to be absolutely careful on what you purchase. Because quite often than not, it's very easy to go for a rugged looking tyre from an aesthetic point of view, but it's not what you want.
Yeah, no, I get that. I think loads of people fall into that trap, don't they? If they want something that looks really aggressive and cool, but realistically, 90% of the time, it isn't going to suit their needs. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of vehicles out there that are overtired at the moment. They're too heavy a pattern for what they're actually using the vehicle for.
Right, okay. And obviously, we'll get on to the direction that the industry is heading in a little while. But obviously, the disadvantages to having too far of an aggressive tyre on a vehicle that you use, I guess, predominantly for road use, maybe very light green laning. There's a few reasons why it is a bad idea, really, to go down that route. The first one that springs to mind for me, having done it myself in the past, is fuel consumption.
Critical. We done an exercise for a certain vehicle manufacturer a few years ago where we worked from road pattern, which the vehicle came out on, to an all-terrain pattern, to a mud-terrain pattern, what the difference in fuel consumption would be. And it would range from road to all-terrain of something like 4, 6%, depending on tyre brand, and then as high as 10, 12% if you're going onto a mud-terrain tyre. So it does have a big difference.
Wow. And that obviously comes down to, if you put a mud tyre and a road tyre next to each other on a hill and rolled them both down, the road tyre would roll further because there's less resistance.
Yep.
And also weight, I suppose.
Yeah, there's not traditionally the mud terrain tyre has a much deeper tread. So even if they were all the same size, the mud terrain would be the heavier.
Sure. So heavier, more rotating mass.
Yep.
More fuel to get up to speed. And all that. all that stuff that comes with it. Interesting. Okay. So obviously, tyres, as with everything else available for Land Rovers, have evolved massively over the years. But where exactly, where would you say it began for Land Rovers and the rubber, the choice of tyres that they were supplied with, perhaps, when they were new?
Very limited.
Right.
Back in 1948, when Land Rover first came to the sea, pure cross-buy tyre. And from memory, it was 616, I think, was the first size on there. Then some vehicles, 650-16 in the cross-buy. And then it evolved onto 750-16, 700-16, and then onto your radials.
Yeah, so just briefly, because I don't actually think I know the real true answer to this, the difference between a cross ply, which has a bit of a reputation now, and the it's the construction, isn't it, between the difference between a cross ply and a radial?
Yeah, the radial tyre is, the belts are at angles, whereas the cross ply is overlap. Now, on your traditional Land Rover, the cross ply is better suited because that it's got that quicker steering response, whereas your more modern vehicles, because of the torque that's going through, a cross-bar tyre wouldn't meet the needs for that. In my humble opinion, the radial tyre is far more suited for the more powerful vehicle.
Right.
Which is exactly as the vehicles evolved, going on to your discos in the 90s, etc.
I was going to say, there's a reason, obviously, that all tyres, or pretty much all tyres fitted now to 404s are radials. And that's just, like you say, they've come so far from something with, you know, 52 horsepower to now, you know, way over to 300. Cross-ply's never going to cut it.
No, never in a million years. Never in a million years.
And obviously, sizes are a huge thing. You've mentioned a few already, like the kicking off with the 600x16, a tiny little digestive biscuit of a tyre, to now what's available for, you know, the latest crop of stuff, which is, you know, the range is huge for a start, isn't it?
In 1995, when we'd done the Land Rover Billingshire at Northampton, we took 12 sizes to cover the Land Rover mark. If we were to do that now, you'd be in excess of 160 sizes.
Wow.
It's evolved at a fast rate of knots. And a lot of things are the reason for that. Electric vehicles, hybrid vehicles, low profiles, tyres, you know, the vehicles become more powerful, etc., etc. Noise cancelling systems.
Yeah, that's something that was quite open to me when I drove the latest Velar. The noise cancelling in that, combined with, obviously, they're so refined now. They're silent to drive on the road. Absolutely unreal. And a lot of that, obviously, is down to the tyres.
Absolutely. It's the noise quality, not just from an EU regulation point of view, but from a demand that the driver expects now is so high. The standards are so high. Land Rover is probably the lead out of all the SUV 4x4 vehicles.
Right. And I suppose, yeah, you say demand, obviously, as vehicles have taken on hybrid drivelines and are heading towards full EV, things like that, the load ratings on these tyres have to be that much higher just because of the pure weight of the vehicles and the torque. I guess.
100% correct. And I'm glad you mentioned that.
Okay.
Because there's several sizes that are Land Rover, Range Rover sizes that also appear on other vehicle marks.
Right.
And the need to be really careful on giving the tyre retailer, when buying tyres, the full tyre size and the load and speed index is critical, because some of the Asian vehicles that come across have a lower load rating, albeit it's on the same size that would go onto a Land Rover mark. So to make sure you have all your information so you can get an accurate quote is essential.
Right, okay. So, I mean, as far as the buying process goes, do you think the way obviously there's a lot more choice now as regards brand and pattern and size. How has the way that Land Rover owners buy tyres changed, do you think? Is that something you've seen a shift in over the years? Or
I think people have, I'm going to be careful how I word this. Internet is the obvious choice, Martin. Yeah, people go to the internet. I would like to think they research the tyres properly and across brands. I personally feel that sometimes people become misinformed via the internet.
Right.
So I think to do your research and then speak to a professional tyre person, explaining what you're doing with the vehicle and what type of mileage you're doing in over the year, and do you go onto the continent? Because that's important, because if you're going onto the continent and you're going to parts of Europe where you need a three-peat mountain snowflake tyre, not all tyre brands have that. So it's really painting the picture so you can get the right information so you can get quoted properly.
Okay. So you mentioned three-peat mountain snowflake. That's something that some people might be familiar with, others maybe not. So can you just give us a little lowdown on exactly what that is?
There is a regulation. Traditionally, if we go back in time, it was M&S.
Yes.
Snow.
Okay.
And that was very loosely attached to certain tyre brands. And the criteria for that was very wishy-washy.
Right.
And I'm speaking in my speak now, okay? The three-peat mountain snowflake, however, is a proper regulated system. And that tyre has to meet the needs to be able to travel in winter conditions below 7 degrees, where the rubber becomes more, it still keeps it salty.
Yeah.
And it's traditionally, there's more sipes in the tyre, which are little slits in the tread blocks, which help give you the grip. And most of these tyres that have the three-peat mountain snowflake have a high content of silica.
Right.
Which helps performance on road in the wet, but also allows the rubber to be more subtle.
Right, okay. So it's all about, yeah, performance through temperature ranges. And like you say, because we all know as things get colder, rubber, plastic, whatever, but they become harder and more brittle.
Absolutely.
Tyres can't do that because then they're useless if you're going for those weather conditions, I guess.
Yeah, and people fall into the trap that you only need those tyres if you're driving in snow. Well, if you think that 6 months of the year in the UK, our temperatures are below 7 degrees, then a three-peat mountain snowflake tyre is absolutely ideal. So we are seeing the need for that all-season type tyre, which the three-peat mountain snowflake symbol is associated with, becoming more and more important.
Okay, good stuff. So yeah, if you are, I mean, arguably, even like you say, day-to-day driving in the UK, it'd be a real bonus to go after a tyre with that rating, because you know it's going to perform and you need it when it does get colder.
Fit it and forget it.
Fit and forget. There we go. Okay. All right. So our hypothetical buyer's gone out. They've found what they want. They've spoken to an expert. They've fitted a brand new set of four or five tyres that suit their needs, and they're really happy with them. How do they get the best and make that investment last as best as possible?
On four-wheel drive vehicles, and we're talking whether it's four-wheel drive or whether it's all-wheel drive, always changing sets of four.
Okay.
If we go back to the Freelander 1, which, correct me on my dates here, Martin, 1998 to 2006.
Yep, you're correct.
The tyre change was very, very critical. If you changed just one tyre or two tyres and you went on to a different make, then sometimes that would cause problem with the transmission and damage the viscous coupling.
Right.
So that's why over the years, there's the newer models, there's all-terrain products now available in the exact size that's on that vehicle, instead of changing the tire size to get an all-terrain or motorbike tire for your needs.
Right. Got you. I was going to say that moving on to sort of the more off-road or 50-50 on off-road, back, you know, years and years ago, decades ago now, choice was very limited because you were stuck with the traditional utility, I guess, sizes that you find on your Series, your Defender, things like that. That's completely changed now, hasn't it? Because of the way of what people want from their cars, I guess.
Tire manufacturers, vehicle have had to adapt to what the vehicle manufacturers want.
Right.
You've got a lot of vehicles now where they actually ask for that tire to do specific things. That could be a sporty vehicle. So they want that tire, so when it goes into corners, to have really good grip in wet and dry conditions. Or if it's more of a luxury vehicle, they may want that vehicle to be very, very quiet and absorb more shocks in the road to make it a more comfortable drive. So that's why you've got some of these tyres now that come homologated. For the Land Rover mark, it would be LR on the sidewall.
Right,
the tyre. And that's with Pirelli, Michelin, or any of the premium brands that go onto the vehicle.
Okay, interesting. I didn't know that. Going back in time then, obviously you say you had your 600 by 16s. What brands, if you like, obviously you, under Mitchell Dealer, you sell and distribute a huge range of tyre brands.
We do, yeah.
What would you say, which ones, if you like, have been instrumental? I mean, I can think of two or three off the top of my head that everyone listening to this podcast will probably know. Which, in your mind, have been the most pioneering, I guess?
All your premium manufacturers over the last 150 years have had pioneering moments of some description. And Dunlop with the first pneumatic tyre in the late 1880s. Michelin with the first radial tyre in the 1940s. General Tyre came out with the carbon black concept, which added to the rubber mix, enabled the tyre to last longer. And that was a big turning point. Goodyear with the tubeless tyre. I think it was Goodyear with a tubeless tyre. Went from that traditional tube tyre rim to a tubeless tyre. And I think that was in the 40s as well. No, early 50s that was. And of course, from a Land Rover, Range Rover point of view, 1976 was the introduction of the first all-terrain.
Okay.
And, you know, it's you've got choice now. And 1980, and that first all-terrain was BF Goodrich.
Yes.
And then the first mud-terrain was Goodrich, and that was in 1980. So, you know, there's several landmarks throughout the evolution of the tyres that's come about. And it's all been beneficial for the Land Rover owners as such.
Absolutely. I can picture every generation of all-terrain and mud-terrain from BF Goodrich. And I know plenty of people listening will probably have really yearned after a set of the especially the mud-terrains when they first came out, that iconic tread pattern that's really sort of stood the test of time and then, of course, developed into what we're seeing now through various generations.
Well, that mud-terrain is being replicated by a certain remolder.
Yeah,
and it's still one of the best sellers in the UK market.
I had a set on my first ever 19. I did, yeah. They were very good. So, obviously, we've touched on Series. Defender, then. Defender was offered with, you could have either steel or alloy wheels. We're not going to dwell too much on wheels, but they obviously had different size tyres because steels were narrower than alloys. How does tyre width impact how a Land Rover drives on and off the road?
Are we talking about the old style traditional Defender?
Yeah, let's
say so. 5016, it originally came out on.
Yeah.
So that was on a radial tyre and steel wheels.
Yes.
So The evolution there was that there wasn't much in the way of tyre choice.
Right.
It was either a all-terrain or a mud-terrain type tyre. We very quickly, obviously, utility companies started using those vehicles because they were the go-to vehicle.
Right.
Great for towing. Plenty of room, and you could coach build them quite easily. Absolutely ideal. But that alloy wheel enabled a wider fitment because the traditional Land Rover was on a 5.5-inch rim.
Yes.
You couldn't put anything bigger than a 750/16 on there. And that was really hindering the utility companies and the military. So what they came to us and asked for a solution. And one of those solutions was we had a wheel produce in a 7/16 with the appropriate load rating for the coach built 130s.
Right.
Defenders. And we went with either a 2.358/5.16 or a 2.657/5.16. Both of these kept the same overall diameter as a 7.50/16, but going naturally wider. And that wheel would take it. And what was happening with the utility companies and why that was really important for them was when they went into landowners to repair fields, to repair pylons and what have you, they would get charged for the damage to the ground by the square foot.
Oh.
So if the ground was very, very soft, obviously that narrower tyre would cut in. Whereas the wider fitment would sit more on top and create less damage. Very much the same as what you see with tractor tyres today. The wider fitment spreads over and less damage to the crops. So there was that evolution where people were using the tyre size for the conditions of service that we were applying it to.
Got you. In fact, one of the things I was going to ask was, what are the implications of a non-standard, if you like? I mean, 2.657/5.16, I think that might have been a factory option at some point.
1998 for the 50th edition.
There you go.
Defender.
Yeah.
It was Black Sidewall BF Goodrich All Terrain. I remember it well. That was a factory fitment. Yes. And the 2.358/5.16 was also a factory fitment. Strangely enough, we were told you could never put anything else other than a 750/16 onto the Land Rover. So in a way, we were kind of pioneers developing these different sizes for that Land Rover need. And eventually, Land Rover started using themselves as OE.
Yes, indeed. I can think of off the top of my head, the General Grammar TR. General, of course, are very, as well as BF Goodrich, obviously, everyone can relate to BF Goodrich. General really did help through the range of Land Rover, didn't they? Starting with, I guess, Defender and working then seemingly quite a forward-thinking company when it comes to sizes and the newer crop, if you like, of Land Rover models.
General Tyre is very unique, and I've personally been working with it for 30 years. Out of all the tyre brands, I would say they're probably the one who will listen to the end user.
Okay.
And what we're really proud of is we attend a lot of shows, we go out and see people, we work with various organisations like the NFU and BASC and what have you. And we gather all this information. And if there's a need for a all-terrain tyre in a size that hasn't yet been produced, hasn't got that pattern available, we'll do a homework, we'll put a business case together, and we'll go and we'll speak to General. And they will, 9 times out of 10, produce that tyre for us. And over the years, they've looked after the Land Rover market extremely well. We mentioned earlier, before the podcast, the Range Rover P38, when that came out in 98. That came out on a low-profile tyre, 2.55/5.18, on a Hurricane twin-spoke wheel. Every tyre manufacturer said, you cannot make an all-terrain tyre in a 55 series. And we went across with General and we pushed them hard and they agreed to produce a tyre in 255, 55, 18 in an all-terrain pattern. And that was in the early 2000s. That tyre became extremely popular across Europe and that led to other sizes being developed. Sizes for the Range Rover Sport that came out 20-inch, 275, 40, 20. That one produced an all-terrain, that came out there. Disco 4, 255, 55, 19. Pirelli actually stopped making their all-terrain tyre. When that vehicle came out, we asked General to produce it because we knew that tyre would be successful in their pattern, and it was. To the modern-day vehicle, 275, 45, 21, 275, 40, 22 for the Range Rovers, General made that. You know, and that's because the people who drive the vehicles asked for it. We went away to General and we got it produced. And if we go right up to date to the modern day Defender, Jaguar Land Rover have approved the 255 60 20, the 255 70 18, and the 255 65 19 General AT3 as a 4x4 option for the new Defenders. So the General brand has been very, very supportive of the Land Rover owners.
It's good to hear. It's good. It's that's what you need, really, I guess, from a company, especially tyres, which obviously are renewed all the time. They're developing all the time. They've come a long way, obviously, from, you know, decades ago. The processes, the manufacturing, the compounds, as we mentioned briefly about the silica content, stuff like that. Tell you what, I've got a question. What actually is carbon black? You mentioned it and I've been whacking my brain to figure out what it is. I thought it just coloured the rubber.
No. If you go back in time, the tyres were natural rubber and they would not wear. And they developed it over time, obviously. But the tyres were just not nasty. And it was very common for that tyre to get a little bit misshaped sometimes.
Oh, right. Okay.
And if you look at the old patterns, they were more like zigzag pattern in the tyre, so there was not as much of that block that we see today. We adding the carbon black into the rubber mixture actually gave that tyre a little bit more rigidity.
Okay.
And it, in return, it actually helped with the mileage return.
Oh, I see.
Improved the mileage return on those tyres.
Got you.
All right, cool.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
So obviously, the number of different brands of tyres available, the sizes, things like that, the price range is a huge thing for people buying tyres. Especially in the UK, it seems like a lot of people, that's one of the first things they look at is they set their budget and then they won't, you know, they'll shop in that band, if you like. There's a lot of, we all know that the premium brands, but there's a lot of newcomers to the scene as well, isn't there? I was sort of wondering, is there really a discernible difference in quality between the premium ones and the now more affordable ones? Because surely they all have to go through similar testing.
That's a great question. Wasn't expecting that one, Martin. There's a huge difference.
Is there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
The premium manufacturers and wood, the millions of pounds they spend on research and development is unbelievable. And the technology that they come to the table with is the benchmark for all the other brands that you're hinting at. if you think that the noise cancelling systems that's in the vehicles and so in the tyres for electric and hybrid vehicles, that needs lower resistance and to improve the, you know, obviously the range on that particular vehicle. The high speed some of these vehicles can get at, that tyre has to be able to perform in wet, dry, snow, ice conditions. You know, there's, and it's all down to the rubber compounding, the hours and hours and hours of testing and the thousands and thousands of miles. That's all done by the premium manufacturers, that they put the hard miles in on this.
Right, okay.
There are some very, very good mid-range brands that are coming through, and very strong mid-range brands. And those brands are extremely good. Their technologies are there. There are a lot of cheaper brands, and some of those brands are pretty good. But you do pay for what you get.
Okay.
Okay. From performance to longevity. Yeah. You do pay for what you get.
Right. So I guess that mantra of buy the best you can afford probably does apply here.
I think it goes back to the original question. What do you use your vehicle for?
Okay.
All right. Because if you are using that vehicle off-road and you've got road tires on there, then you need to go for an all-terrain, which will cost you more normally than what a road-going tire would.
Right.
Overall. And I think, and then you apply your budget. You choose your pattern that works for what you're using the vehicle for. That's the essential bit.
Yeah.
And then you find a tire brand to suit your needs. And that's where you do your research. You look online, you do your research, you talk to a tire professional, and just make sure that your choice that you think you found is the right choice for you. And then you just find something to your budget. And then you research that tire.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah, that makes total sense. Right. Okay. So we'll just revisit one earlier because I think we kind of probably went off on a bit of a tangent. How is the, what are your top tips, if you like, for, you've spent your money, you've got your lovely new tyres, set of four on a Land Rover. How are you making those tyres last? How are you looking after them? What would you say are the most critical things you can do to make sure you get the best out of your investment?
If we go back to when we passed our driving tests, when we were looking at the old highway code, checking your tyre pressures on a regular basis, critical. If your tyre is underinflated, it can cause your tyre to wear on the shoulders. If it's overinflated, it will cause the tyre to wear in the middle.
Yes.
So you need to keep your tyre pressure correct and don't ignore. If you're carrying load or towing, you may have to adjust your tire pressures for that. Making sure they're balanced.
Okay.
Critical. Now, when you buy a tire from the tire retailer, they will automatically balance that. The price you're given includes the balance of that tire. On your normal road patterns, you'll probably get 20 to 30,000 miles. On an all-terrain tyre, you could go up as high as 50, 60,000 miles on a good brand.
Right.
Okay. So the need to balance those, that wheel and tyre assembly after 10, 12,000 miles is also critical because it's the common perception, yeah, I've balanced these tyres when I bought them. As you do the miles, you wear down the tyre. So that tyre weight will need adjusting.
Right. Okay.
And by balancing wheels and making sure that they're correct, it prevents the tyre from becoming misshaped.
Right.
Okay. So there's something called heel and toe, which could be related to balance or suspension.
Is that like the feathering you get?
That's it. You've got it.
Right.
So, and that will obviously will reduce your tyre life. Okay. So you won't get your value for money out of the tyre. Getting your wheel alignment checked. If it's a road orientated vehicle, you get it checked at point of purchase of the tyres. Normally it's a free check and then you only pay for adjustment. If you hit a bad curb or pothole in the road, get it checked.
Yeah.
Because it could put the alignment out. if it's an off-road vehicle, then I would have something in place where I'd get a bit friendly with your local tire guy and say, look, can I get this checked every 4 months type of thing, and do me a deal to get it aligned. So it depends on the conditions of use.
Absolutely. I mean, and talking from personal experience, making a good choice regarding where you get your alignment done is really important, because some places, either Land Rovers especially, from, again, personal experience, things like Discovery 3 and 4 that have got so many adjustments, and so it's quite a complex suspension on them. A lot of garages will look at them and go, oh, I don't really want to deal with that. So getting a good, reliable place, a good specialist, is really important.
When I was fitting, back when Ben Hur was racing, to adjust the alignment was a couple of 22mm nuts.
Yeah.
Okay? Now it is very complex, because you've got to take in consideration on a lot of vehicles, the camber angles, the kingpins, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
When you buy your tyres, make sure that the place is happy to look after a four-wheel drive vehicle.
Yeah.
On alignment. If your alignment's set up properly, you shouldn't have any problem, and just get it checked every 12, 15,000 miles, I would, or unless you hit a bad curb or pothole in the road.
Yeah.
Then I'll get it checked again.
Definitely. And as you touched on earlier, pressure is so important. And most Land Rovers have either inside fuel flap or on the sun visor or in the door jam, what you should run.
Tire pressures, absolutely.
So there's no excuse not to do it.
No, and the other thing that people forget, always the tread that you can see, just have a look, see if there's any stones in the tread grooves. If there is, pop them out, because those little stones can drill into the casing.
Right.
And actually could cause it to lose pressure through a period of time.
Yeah, and like you say, it doesn't take long. It was a conversation we'd had previously, I think. It doesn't take long for a tyre at low pressure to build up far more heat than it would normally, which can then in turn affect the construction of it, and then you're into an expensive bill.
I think we've all had punctures from time to time, and we've seen the state of the tyres once driven up. They get destroyed very, very quickly. If a tyre's run underinflated or the tyre pressure's not correct, it will add value. It would add cost to your fuel.
Yeah.
Because it's not being run properly. So it's tyre pressure is extremely important from a money point of view and from a safety point of view.
Yeah, you could. And also, I mean, it depends how bad it's gone. I suppose if you've got a really low pressure front or rear, you'll sometimes feel a pulling on the steering wheel. Right. Steering wheel might not sit completely central, things like that. So
your modern day vehicles will have TPMS systems, which will let you know if there's any tire pressure change. But yeah, tire pressure is extremely important. Wheel alignment, wheel balancing.
Yeah, I wouldn't, to be honest, I hadn't even considered the fact that, because I think most people think when they get new tyres, either they go to a retailer and get them fitted and balanced, and you put them on and you never have to get them balanced again. But clearly, you do.
Over the years, the Land Rover magazine has always been very good giving that kind of information out to their readers. And it's the Land Rover drivers are more in tune with what they need to look out for.
I think that's fair to say. Yeah, definitely. Especially like you say, traditional stuff, the fender and that, you're always listening or feeling for that little, any changes that you might have to investigate. Just the nature of it's an analog vehicle, isn't it?
Yeah.
So let's talk about off-roading for a minute. I'm going to go off I'm literally going to go off piste now, and I'm going to ask you about that, because before, historically, you've had three different types of tyre, haven't you? You've had road tyres for driving on the road, all terrains for doing a bit of both, and mud terrains predominantly for off-road driving. But now the sort of lines are a bit blurred, aren't they?
Yeah. The vehicle car park out there is changing an awful lot. The need for an electric vehicle, hybrid, PHEV, is more prominent now. and there's a lot of vehicles out there that are coming into that crossover SUV market.
Right.
Coming more away from car, because to enable them to have that EV capability, they need a bigger platform.
Right.
So what we're seeing now coming through is the need for that mild all-terrain type tyre to come in, which sits in between a road pattern and an all-terrain, your traditional all-terrain pattern. That suits those crossover and SUV vehicles quite well. They don't have to have four-wheel drive. They don't have to have all-wheel drive, but they're looking for something a little bit more.
Yeah, sure. And
these will probably be like an all-season type pattern, strobe mild all-terrain type pattern. And then you've got the rugged terrain that sits in between an all-terrain and a mud terrain. Now, that's really, we see most of that type of fitment going in towards that pickup type market.
Okay.
But yeah, that you're quite right. That traditional three pillars of road pattern, all-terrain, mud patterns are changing, and you're seeing the need for that mild all-terrain to come through and that rugged terrain type pattern to come through.
I was going to say, before we started recording, actually, you made a great point in that, you know, decades ago, BF Goodrich came out with the Track Edge, which was almost between, that was almost what, like before, ahead of its time, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. In today's world, that would be classed as a rugged terrain.
Yeah.
And that was two tyres in one. And that's exactly what the rugged terrain is today. And that mild all-terrain is the Track Edge equivalent of either a road tyre, it's in between a road tyre and an all-terrain.
Yeah, so if you've never heard of the BF Goodrich Track Edge, TRAC Edge, Google it. It's sort of like quite a closed-in pattern in the middle, isn't it? But with big gaps between the lugs on the outside.
Two tyres in one.
Yeah.
The centre pattern was the all-terrain pattern. The shoulder section was the mud terrain.
There you go. Yeah, so yeah, it definitely was ahead of its time. And then it went a bit quiet on that front, but it's well and truly made a resurgence, hasn't it? These extra genres.
Yeah. That type of pattern definitely has started to come through now. But the clever systems like the Terrain Response that's on Land Rover, the need to go for that mud terrain stroke rugged terrain pattern is not so common now, because a good all-terrain on that vehicle really complements that four-wheel drive system. That four-wheel drive system is probably the best in the world.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, from any vehicle. It's virtually unstoppable on an all-terrain type tyre.
I was going to say, it's amazing, having driven what would have then been quite new models off-road with Terrain Response and then later Terrain Response 2, how far they will go with road tyres, as you would have rolled on that factory, you know, Pirelli Scorpions or whatever. But going to an all-terrain, you unlock so much more capability, and it's almost like Terrain Response was kind of designed to go with... Terrain Response will never be better than the tyres fitted to the vehicle, I guess. So you go to that slightly more aggressive pattern, and the capability is amazing. Absolutely amazing. That vehicle technology, I suppose, has a lot to answer for. You mentioned hybrid, full EV. Obviously, we've got a fully electric Range Rover coming around later this year. That will be really interesting to see what happens tyre-wise on that, because the wheels are getting bigger and bigger, aren't they, on that stuff?
They are. The 23-inch wheel is becoming quite common. Not ideal for a off-road vehicle. Yeah, because you've got much smaller sidewall height, which can easily get pinched. So not ideal, but it's the way the market's going. I'm sure there will be conversions that will become available to help people get onto all-terrain type patterns. And hopefully one day I'll have an all-terrain in the exact size for that.
Excellent. The vehicle. Good stuff. I remember when the first generation Sport and the L322 came out with the 20-inch wheels. And that was like, wow, they're such low profile now. Of course, like you say, 23-inch wheels, quite commonplace on the big stuff. But yeah, the sort of mild all-terrain, the all-season crossover, I guess that's especially relevant to things like Discovery, Sport, Velar, vehicles which... you know, maybe families buy and they go and do trips to France or whatever and different weather conditions, that sort of thing. They don't want a tyre that's going to be obnoxious and loud, but they need a bit more capability than just a road tyre.
And, you know, more and more people seem to be doing that. Roof tents are really popular, getting on and off campsites, things like that. It's really interesting the way it's going.
Yep, and the tire manufacturers are certainly addressing that area. A couple of brands that I can think of straight off, brands like General Tire, really addressing that mild all-terrain sector. They've got a new pattern coming through shortly. Conforza do a mild all-terrain, which is an entry-level brand, you know. Mm. You know, so there are brands coming that are really tackling that mild all-terrain segment.
I was going to say Conforza really seem to be becoming popular. Before, obviously, Land Rover owner closed, we had a set of the CF1100s on that. They're the all-terrain pattern in 235/85, and they're really impressive. For the money, like, hard to beat, I dare say.
And this is it. And it goes back to the original question. It's, you know, you find out what you're going to use the vehicle for. You know what you're going to use the vehicle for. You know how much money you've got in the bank. And then you know the pattern of tire you want. And then you just work to something to your means, spare cash you have to spend on tyres.
If you own a Land Rover, Range Rover or Jaguar and have had trouble with your diesel particulate filter, the DPF, then listen carefully. Lee Day, a major UK law firm, is leading a group claim against Jaguar Land Rover for allegedly faulty DPF systems in diesel models made between 2015 and 2023. They already represent nearly 20,000 Land Rover, Range Rover and Jaguar drivers in a no-win, no-fee compensation claim. To see if your Land Rover qualifies for the claim, visit leedaylaw.info/JLRDPF today.
Conforza really ticks that entry-level box. It's a very good quality tyre. It's a very good pattern, aesthetically, very open all-terrain tyre pattern. And it's the reports we have from people driving it, and it's been out there now for nearly 3 years, very, very strong. And, this, you know, it's growing all the time. And their size range is growing as well. So they're really seeing the popularity of that tyre really growing themselves.
Brilliant. No, it's great. Like you say, the more people maybe coming into the scene who haven't had Land Rovers before and have just bought their first one, they want to do a bit of green laning, stuff like that, but don't want to invest, you know. Because let's not beat around the bush here. Tyres, they've never been more expensive. It feels like certain brands than they are now. So it's important that there's always that more wallet-friendly option.
Yes, price is obviously important. I mean, it applies to everybody, you know. The reason why tyres have increased so much in price is the raw materials that go into the production of the tyres.
Right, okay.
One of the largest producers of carbon black is Ukraine. And when the trouble started there,
yeah.
Tire manufacturers really had to source carbon black from other areas.
Right.
And of course, that cost more because the demand was there. Transportation to get it to the factories obviously increased. So, yeah, the cost of the raw materials play a big, big part in a tire.
Interesting. Fair enough. Okay. So let's say, for instance, you're going to look at, because one of the things we know our listeners absolutely love hearing about is buying Land Rovers, and we love to talk about buying Land Rovers as well. Say you were going to look at buying a Land Rover, and you've taken it for a drive, you've poked it, prodded it, pressed all the buttons, you've spoken to the owner, you're thinking about buying it. What are there any sort of any tyre related signs that it might be a good or a bad idea to go through with the purchase?
I would look at really to see if it's the same brand of tyre all round.
Okay.
On the vehicle, I would look to see if it's the same size all round as well. People don't tend to do that. And the reason why I say that is exactly for the reason us with the Freelander one.
Yeah.
We've got different sizes on a vehicle. The tire manufacturers have to make a tire size to a certain tolerance.
Right.
And this is called ETRTO, manufacturer guidelines. And this stipulates that whatever the reference tire is, you have to make your tire between plus 1.5% or minus 2.5%. So that could be a 4% difference.
That's quite a lot.
On a four-wheel drive vehicle, it is, Martin. So that's why making sure it's the right size tire and brand and pattern, even the same brand with different patterns, have a difference in overall diameters.
Right.
Okay, so making sure it's the right, the same size and pattern all round is essential in my eyes. Look for any sidewall buffing where they pushed up against a curb.
Oh, yeah.
Because if there's really a lot of chunks missing out, or sometimes if your tire's got white letters on there, then you start seeing a white band appear around the sidewall of the tire. That can sometimes mean, well, hang on a minute, that could have been pushed up against a curb one too many times. Has it done any damage underneath as well?
Yeah,
maybe bent a track rod. You don't know. So looking for those obvious bits, cuts, bulges on the tyres, that's what I'd be doing.
No, it makes total sense. Yeah, there's a lot of, you build up a picture when you go to buy a new Land Rover, don't you? But
a tyre tells a story. And I mean, and also look at the tread. If it's worn more side and more than the other side, then that could mean that the alignment's out, or is there a problem with the suspension?
Right.
If you run your hand over the top of the tread for half the tread circumference, is your hand going up and down? It could be that the tire's uneven. Why is it uneven? It could have a problem with suspension, something like that. So the tire tells a lot of stories.
I was going to say, yeah, it does. And it kind of all points to, if you have got one or more of these things, how well has the rest of the car been looked after, I suppose?
Precisely.
So yeah, that's a real telltale. And you mentioned heel and toe wear feathering. That was a big problem on the early Freelander ones as well, on the insides of the back wheels.
Yep.
Due to the viscous coupling winding up at low speed. Freelander 2 as well, they were quite sensitive because they were a Haldex four-wheel drive, which... And if you were to fit a pair of tyres, which some people did for cost reasons or whatever, rightly or wrongly, they didn't like it being, I forget exactly, I think they had to go on the back because they had a slightly larger rolling radius. So it didn't all get confused. There's a lot to think about. But yeah, like you say, replace them all at once if you can, and you're ruling out all these potential issues.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
Good stuff. Anything more to add then? Where do you think, obviously tyre technology has moved on hugely in, over the decades. Where do you think, aside from obviously having to deal with the increased weight of newer cars, where do you think it's going?
Oh, well, there's a question. I think there's always going to be a need for an all-terrain type tyre.
Okay.
I think four-wheel drive transmission systems will get even more cleverer. And I think the need for a mud terrain tyre will probably decrease somewhat because those systems will improve dramatically. It'd be interesting to see where electric takes us.
Right.
Because of the torque that's going through the wheels. And anyone who's got an electric car and put the foot down, you see how quick you can get up to speed. It's how a road tyre works very well on there. It's how those more aggressive tyres work. So that all-terrain tyre, how does that work on those vehicles? And how will the all-terrain tyre develop? It go through evolution yet again.
Yeah,
it's those things here, I think, will be interesting to see how that pans out over the next 4 or 5 years.
Definitely. It's funny, a question I've got actually, you mentioned about mud terrains potentially not being quite as relevant in future. Maybe not with new cars, obviously. That's there'll still be an element in enthusiast circles. But a few years ago now, it went from mud terrains became kind of exempt from the normal standards that tyres have to be held to with professional off-road. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. That was that POR really came in when the tyre labelling came in. And I think that was 2012 when that labelling came in.
Right. Oh, a little bit longer ago than I thought.
It became very apparent that people like utility companies and the military needed a mud terrain tyre. And at that point, mud terrain tyres would have been exempt. You weren't allowed to sell them. So they had to come out with a professional off-road marking pretty quick. And you see professional on-road on a lot of the rugged terrain products as well.
Oh, right.
And there's three main criteria. The tyre can't be above a Q speed rated, which is 99 miles an hour. 70% to 30% land to void ratio. So that's the tread groove to the tread block. And it must have a minimum of 11 millimeter, I think, is tread depth. If it ticks all those three criteria, then the tyre manufacturer can stamp it POR.
Right. Because I noticed the shift when tyres started coming out with that POR label, but I never really understood what the difference was.
So they are label exempt. They don't need any tyre labelling.
Right. Interesting.
Cool. And you'll notice that there's remoulders that produce quite a lot of the aggressive tyre patterns. They're exempt as well from, because it's a remold, recycled tyre.
Right.
They're exempt from that label value as well. And they don't have to POR.
That's interesting. Is that just because it's an ecological thing to be seen to
be
doing?
Absolutely right, yeah.
Right. Interesting. Well, there we go then. Anything to add, Dave?
No, not really. Yeah. I mean, I think we've covered an awful lot off there in such a short period of time. Tyres are extremely important. I think for me, you can have brakes on a car, but if you haven't got the right, if your tyres are bald, you're not going to stop.
No.
In tricky conditions, weather conditions, tyres are extremely important.
Oh, I've got one last question for you. Well, you might have. Sorry. Say you've got all-terrains or mud. I've wondered about this for ages. Obviously, when you buy a new all-terrain or a new mud terrain, the tread blocks are all nice and sharp. You've got plenty of tread depth. They're at their grippiest at that point. At what point, if you're going off-road or greenlaning regularly, should you replace an all-terrain or a mud terrain?
I think your readers will tell you when they need to change their tyres. From you start losing biting edges on something like a mud terrain at about 5 mil. As a rule,
okay.
You could probably get down to about 4 or 3, and then you'll start to really struggle.
Right.
Some depends on where you're driving. If you're driving on flint, I would change at 5 mil.
Okay.
I would use mud terrain type tyres because the rubber compound is a lot stronger, a lot more rubber, and the casing's normally more robust than a mud terrain type tyre. And a lot of the utility companies change that 5 for that very, very reason when they operate around the wind farms and that type of thing. All terrains, I think you'll be, if 4 mil,
okay,
is the norm, 3 mil for if you're mild off-roading. A lot of people who are using four-wheel drive vehicles will change at a minimum. They won't leave any more than 3 mil.
No,
I'm sure. As a rule.
No, that's fair enough. Speaking for myself, and I know a lot of other enthusiasts, people who are into the vehicles that they drive, they're enthusiastic about it. They will all not look for an excuse to change or replace tyres, but by the time they've got to that tread depth, they're already looking.
Like I said, I mean, there's no written rule there. It's the people who are driving the vehicles will know when they need to change their tyres. As long as in all-terrain, mud-terrain circles, yeah, people know.
Got it. Cool. All right. Well, I think we'll wrap up there, Dave. Thank you ever so much for having me and imparting such invaluable information.
Yeah. thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you very much, Martin.
Not at all. Obviously, please, obviously, the latest issue of LRM's on sale now. It's got a huge tyre guide, tyre and wheel guide in there, covering all the bases, even more information probably than we've spoken about here. So please do go out, pick up the latest issue, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, subscribe to the LRM YouTube channel because we're adding more content to that whenever we can. And yeah, any questions or anything like that, I'm sure I can go back to Dave and ask him, editorial@lrm.co.uk, or comment on our social posts and we'll get back to you. So thanks for listening and we'll catch you next week.
Thank you.